culture, current events, our Catholic faith. 50 minutes every afternoon. Thank you for being with us. Tom Corcoran will join us this afternoon of Church of the Nativity up in Timonia, Maryland. Of course, these are the guys who have written the book Rebuilt and doing a lot of stuff in their rebuilding. We'll actually talk about that because they are building new for a new facility because they have to facilitate the growth that they have seen and certainly the demands of what they're doing and the way they're doing it. They're in that wonderful Catholic parish of Church of the Nativity, Timonia, Maryland. I've been there. I am a huge fan. We'll talk to Tom a little bit later on. Also, apparently Donald Trump is saying that the Trump University judge is unfit to judge his case because he's Hispanic and there's a conflict of interest. Interesting. Okay. And we'll talk a little bit about something that's been on my heart, the classics, right? I think we think that because something is old, it is good. And so I'm not sure that that's necessarily the case, nor am I sure that just because it's new, it's bad. But I think that there's an interesting prevalence in thoughts about classical, traditional, and anything other than that is not good. We'll talk about all of that and more back in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Out.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Our Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith. We discuss that for 50 minutes every afternoon. Follow me over on Facebook. You'll see me talk about the things that we talk about here on the show over there with your opportunity to chime in ahead of time, offer your opinions. We'll get into one of those that's garnered some thoughts in just a moment. This is an interesting reflection here from Christianity Today. And basically, it's the question, what do you do with material of those who have fallen from grace? So, and they use the example of worship leaders who write worship music, right? So they're composers, they're out there with a big body of work, and there's one particular situation here they're talking about where a worship leader came forth and admitted his infidelity after a divorce from his wife. And so the question is, what do you do with this? Which is an interesting question, I think, from the standpoint of Christianity, no doubt, because I would hope that forgiveness says we forgive, right? We know that everyone is weak, but so what? And I know this sounds crazy. I don't know. To me, it sounds Catholic, right? Because this is how we are. So what if in the midst of your struggle, of your greatest struggle, with temptation and giving in, even giving into that temptation, that at that very moment you have the greatest inspiration to write one of the most beautiful and heartfelt worship songs crying out to God, which is likely this could happen. Well, guess what? That work that you've done is still inspired, right? It's inspired. Regardless of your lifestyle, that work is inspired. And this is what we believe. Yeah, priests, my goodness, right? You can be in the deepest of sin, but because of being in persona Christi, I know there's a different dynamic, but that the sin of the priest does not affect the efficacy of the sacrament. So I think that we have to realize that God inspires, even in the midst of the most sinful situations, there can still be sparks and lights and flashes of Holy Spirit inspiration that's true and good. And you can't say it's all bad, we got to throw away all this person's work because they happen to fall from grace. No, because if that's the case, just because someone has publicly admitted a an affair and has gone through a divorce does not mean there are others of us who aren't doing equally egregious sins, committing those sins, and they're just not public, right? Hopefully they're reconciled, but they may not be public. So interesting perspective, and I know the general Christian view, and also, I mean, the other view is that, hey, there's infidelity in a marriage is ground for divorce. We don't believe that as Catholics, right? We believe that reconciliation is not only capable, but pretty much expected in any dynamic. There's no throwing in the towel. We work through it. We take it seriously. We take the sacramental nature of that and the sacramental reality and say, we do something with this that is productive and redemptive. So, interesting aside, but I thought that that was worth discussing. Not a lot of play on the Facebook page, but a couple of shares. So, this one is interesting. The Atlantic's article on Donald Trump basically saying that a Latino judge must recuse himself from presiding over the case regarding his Trump University, which was this a scam? Was this some sort of Ponzi sort of established, never intended really to give and deliver on the goods? What is this all about? And it's getting investigated now, and Trump apparently is concerned that which he has said many times on the campaign trail, all this is nothing. I'm getting accused of things that are untrue, and this is all going to blow over. And now he's saying that the judge, because he's Hispanic, should not be able to judge him. Which, I guess, you can't eat enough taco bowls, right? Maybe that's what it is. You can't eat enough taco bowls to make this one work. So this is where we are. And, you know, this is who we're dealing with. And I think this shows some interesting... First off, it's interesting that our two candidates, right, most viable, if you will, GOP, DNC, they are both under investigation. Right? Goodness, shouldn't that tell you something? Which I'm beginning to embrace more the render to Caesar, right? Like, leave this garbage alone. And help me, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong here, but where does it say that there's something about our faith that has to be intermingled in politics at all? Where does it even say that? I mean, I know we take our voting seriously, and there are those who have died to protect our freedom and the right to have these freedoms, like things of expressing ourselves at the voting booth, but where is it our Christian duty to cast a vote? I just want to ask that, especially when you got two individuals who are equally despicable, right? Does this mean we want one of these individuals leading our country who both seem to be shady operators? I mean, right? Come on. But I think that this is a bigger issue even still than that, and that is this: the rules don't apply to me. And it's not just Donald Trump who has this attitude. There are plenty of individuals out there who are convinced, I mean, maybe because of their positions, maybe because of what they, where they happen to be. We've seen GOP senators, right, accepting bribes from Israel to vote against the Iran deal. I mean, this is where we are, right? And we wonder why we have the problems that we have. And, you know, I've said it a zillion times, I will continue to say it, it is not a political solution. It is not a getting the right person in leadership. It's never that. It's never that, right? It has to be a sea change. It has to be a heart change. It has to be a cultural paradigm shift that says we are going to do things differently. I'm not sure in over 100 years, 200 years, I'm not sure when we've seen that last. I've tried to think of when do we see our country take a shift in that direction. And there's this crazy notion, and where was it? And I ask this with all sincerity, because I don't know this period of history when America was great, like in the sense that we're going to make it great again. When was everything perfect? right? We've had immigration issues from the beginning. Okay, well, let's go back. Let's take it even further back. Let's look at the colonization of this country. Was that when it was great? Because then we were fighting with those who had colonized this country. And granted, I mean, you look at this, there was a lot of colonization. There were Spanish colonies, there were French colonies, and there were English colonies, British colonies. And so where do we really go with that? Because there was already division there, depending on where you were, even though it wasn't quote-unquote America yet. It was still the New World, and there was a tremendous amount of not greatness going on. Things that were really wrong. We're also bringing in the slave trade, introducing this, coming out of the West Indies, coming out of the Mediterranean, and this was a perfect hub of support and connection into that industry. Is that great? Is that where we were? Then we get into the boom of immigration, the processing that took place at Ellis Island. Sure, there seemed to be a degree of fairness and an attempt to allow this to happen. But then what happened once these communities were in the New World? What happened then? We had infighting among ethnic groups. We had gang violence. We had gangsters, right? We had organized crime. Was this when America was great? Is this when it happened? Was it during the civil rights? Was it during the time where we finally decided we need to get our act together and there were those taking a stand for the less fortunate, for the minorities, and we had violence erupt around that? We had rioting in the streets. There was strife on many fronts. Is this when America was great? So when was this golden era? When was this time where everything was perfect that we're trying to reach back toward? I don't get that. I posted on my Facebook page earlier, remember the classics, which we all have this romanticized notion of the classical music, the classical art, the classical literature, something so amazing about this renaissance of product that was produced, right? That the greatest art was a time of yesteryear. Well, you know what? That was pop culture of its time, right? That was addressing something that was meeting a need. And granted, some of it has stood the test of time. I'll agree with that. But there wasn't a time where someone sat down and said, I'm going to create a classic. No, they're creating something that's going to resonate at the moment for what is happening. So that's what we need. We don't need to reach back to anything, nor do we need to look forward to some golden era or some imaginary time where we think everything is going to be perfect. No, we need to address the now. We need to look at what is happening now. Not going back to something, not looking forward to something, and that's all the two sides do. Let's try to capture something that's never been, or let's try to create something that never will be. How about the now? How about the now? Be back with more in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith. We do that for 50 minutes every afternoon. Thank you for joining us. Coming up in the next segment, Tom Corcoran of Church of the Nativity. We'll be talking to him, the rebuilt group up there who have certainly done an amazing job of evangelization. They should be a model for the rest of the Catholic world. I don't think it's really caught on just yet. Unilaterally. But a lot following their lead. We'll talk to him and Find out what those guys have going on. I posted several of these stories on my Facebook page because it kind of develops. There was the boy who was missing in Japan. Then he was found. Now the father's saying that he's sorry. But yeah, I think we've been there. I don't know. I mean, my guess is many of us have been at that point where you think, just get out of the car. Just get out. Just get out. Just get out of the car. Right, whatever. We've been there. With parenting frustration to the point where it's out of control, right? And there's something about the hot box, right? The greenhouse, the confined environment, what this is and the challenge of traveling and especially a long distance. I don't know exactly where they were, the whole dynamics of this, but the parents say, just get out. 7-year-old boy. Just get the heck out, right? In an attempt, of course, to teach him a lesson, to scare him, and they came right back within moments, drove down the road, turned around, let's go back and get him. He was gone, right? Every parent's nightmare, he's nowhere to be seen, and he was nowhere to be seen for a week. Then he shows up, and it's found by the military, and they feed him and find his family. Now, what's going to happen to this family? I don't know. But I promise you, this wasn't some sort of premeditated act of neglect. It was a moment of misjudgment. And I think we've all been there as parents, right? We've been there where we've done stupid. And some of us may have done these things and never, no one ever knew, right? Because our kids were there. Not that I'm saying I've done that. I don't think we've done that. Oh, goodness. Wow. All's well that ends well, I suppose, in this particular situation, but scary stuff all around, and we'll see how it ends up as far as the family and what they might be faced with now, because this didn't turn out the way that they had hoped. Interesting stuff on the Zika virus. Now they're saying that the Olympics in Rio should just be completely halted, and what they're calling safe sex requirements for those who have perhaps been exposed to a Zika outbreak or a Zika area, 8 weeks, I posted this over on my Facebook page as well, 8 weeks of quote-unquote safe sex, right? Now, the only safe is abstinence. The only safe way to practice any thing of to prevent disease or pregnancy is abstinence. This is not what's being promoted, right? Now, we know that there was much hoopla over Pope Francis basically saying there could be something that we need to look at here when it comes to a provision, perhaps, of something. And I don't know contraception. I don't know exactly what he said. Made a reference to the nuns, supposedly, who were allowed to have ways of protecting themselves against rape, whatever. But it's 8 weeks, right? That's 2 months. I happen to know this for a fact because I heard a recent podcast, which I thought, wow, that's an impressive, impressive thing for this couple to do. Now, there are some married couples who may, this would not be that difficult for them, right? This would be something that would be commonplace, unfortunately. But this particular couple, they were going through a divorce remarriage situation. They were in a irregular situation by coming into the faith and needing to get an annulment. The priest in this particular situation said, you know what? Here's what you do. You live as brother and sister until you get this taken care of. And you know what? They did exactly that. This was the testimony that they share. Now, for those who know anything about annulments, they're not quick. They're certainly not 8 weeks, right? It's not 2 months that you get something done. It's usually a year or more. And this was well into and over a full year of time that the two of them lived together in their home as a civilly married couple, not a consecratedly married couple. They allowed that time of healing in their sacramental situation through this time of annulment to live as brother and sister, right? To live with a celibate lifestyle through that time. Pretty darn impressive. And we're talking about opening up the opportunity for contraception usage for 8 weeks, right? Now, granted, when Pope Francis said this, there was no prescription. There was no guideline. There was nothing that says, based on what we see, we think this is the way to do this. Nothing of that nature. It was simply a way of saying there has been a precedent. There's been times where things of this nature have happened before. We had to address this way and or that way. Therefore, there's some opportunity to make this work. So this was it. That was the extent of it. So we don't have guidelines. It was just simply stated that, we could look at this. But unfortunately, that's kind of where we are. Like, okay, we can't control ourselves for 2 months, right? That's just impossible. And I've even, I'm part of several closed groups. There are a number of closed groups I'm a part of, but one is a men's group, a closed men's group. And I've seen these laments of young men saying, how am I supposed to manage doing this for the celibacy thing for the time that for natural family planning, which usually is max about 4 or 5 days, right? Week tops. And, talking about guys who can't control themselves at that point. And so, unfortunately, we're so hypersexualized that that's where we are, and we can't necessarily have a perspective. It's very unfortunate. Speaking of unfortunate, kid found crystal meth in their surprise eggs. My three-year-old, he will watch these surprise egg videos, and there's a zillion of them, and these guys get like 5 and 10 million views because I guess my three-year-old is not the only three-year-old who likes to watch people open up eggs. But, they open up the eggs like, oh, there's a surprise in there. Well, this one in Australia was quite the surprise because the kids didn't know what the heck they'd found in the egg. There's usually candy or a toy or something of this nature. And it's a bag of white powder. They take it to their dad, who gets very suspicious, of course. And it turns out that there's crystal meth in this. So the investigation continues as far as to how this happened, and somebody's got some explaining to do, as we say, right? So we'll see what happens there, but my goodness, that did not have to end that well. Unfortunately, it did. A friend of mine put this over. I posted and reshared it. I don't guess you reshare anything, right? I just shared it. I reposted it and shared it. Mad TV, remember this TV program? This was 20 years ago, and they had this just ridiculously crazy exaggeration of this bring America back, we're going to make America what it used to be, just cartoonish, big-haired woman, country music singer, talking about immigration and racism and gun control and all of these things. 20 years ago was when this parody was released, apparently. You watch it now, and it sounds like a Trump campaign. It sounds like she could be warming up the crowd. And you watch this, and you think, wow, this seems so outrageous 20 years ago, right? We weren't there yet. We had not reached this point, this fever pitch that we are now. And this was like ridiculously funny. And I admit, I watched it and laughed out loud because it is funny. And I had a tear in my eye at the same time because it's sad because there are those who would watch this and agree with everything that this parodizes. I don't know if that's a word. You know what I'm talking about. It parodies. Parodies. Yes, that's the word. Goodness, thank you. So this, it's kind of chilling in a weird sort of way. It's like, well, there was a crystal ball here into seeing where we'd be at this point. And it's unfortunate, right? That this is, we talked about it in the last segment, but my goodness, right? We just keep kind of spiraling into this weirdness and extreme, extreme degrees of this. I saw another Facebook post about this Trump supporter who was being pelted with eggs and other items being thrown at her by the anti-Trump crowd. So, you know, we're just in this world of such division, and it is showing no signs of stopping. That's what's unfortunate. And as I said before, it's not about who the leader is. It's not about who's in the White House. It's not about who will be. It's not about legislation. I mean, it's got to be that cultural mind shift, and not a cultural mind shift that says, what was it? What did we have at one time? How do we get back to that? Or where do we go and how do we get to there? Kind of as I wrapped up the last segment, it's what do we do now? Right? Hey, Tom Corcoran is going to be with us in a minute. Stick around for that. More to come on Neil Brown. Neil Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Tom Corcoran with us from Church at the Nativity of Antimonia, Maryland, the rebuilt church as we know it. Tom, how are you?
Great, Leo. Good to be with you.
Yeah, thank you. So we talked to Father Michael last time. You guys have a big building project underway. That's exciting. And I think that kind of the proof in the pudding of what you guys talk about, that when you do some of these things that you guys have done and incorporated these elements, which took you a long time, it wasn't an overnight success, but it obviously has proved fruitful enough that now you're expanding. That's got to be exciting.
It's very exciting, yes. So we're building a brand new church to accommodate our growth. And we've had our groundbreaking ceremony, but we still have not actually begun construction. A couple last-minute things still holding us up. Had a friend come up recently, hadn't been here in a while, and asked, where's the hole in the ground? I'm like, yes, it's not here yet, but if anyone who's done construction knows, or redone their kitchen, it's a little bit of hold up when it comes to construction projects. So
yeah,
it's just helping us grow in patience, you know?
Yeah. Well, I've been pretty good at digging holes, right? I can usually dig a big hole.
After that, what to do next?
Then try to get it out of the ground, right? Fill that thing up. That can be tough. Well, God bless you guys in that. That's terrific that you've seen this kind of growth. And I'm guessing, I'm just guessing, but maybe you could address this briefly before we talk about your series. But the church that you were in, you kind of adapted to the model that you're doing. Are you going to be able to construct this in a way that's going to allow you to kind of do the things you do a little bit more effectively based on the facility?
Absolutely, yeah. So we've had to kind of round our building to do some of the changes we made to our church, but now the new facility, we can build it in mind with some of the things we do with technology,
of
being welcoming, having a cafe, and kind of creating an environment where people want to be a part of after Mass. So it's going to be a very, very cool facility. There's going to be nothing like it. Y'all have to stop and join us when we open up the new building.
Hey, if it means that you'll take me out for crabs afterwards, absolutely. What are you talking about?
All right, we'll get you a crab cake. I promise. Or you can do the hard shell, crabs where you open them up, break them up.
I love that.
Baltimore style.
That's right. Right. Cracking the crabs. That's what it's about.
Yeah, we'll show you how to pick a crab.
But I need help, because the last time it took me about 4 hours to eat a half pound of those things. So they were quite tricky.
That's part of the fun of it. Just talking, socializing, and we'll teach you. We'll teach you.
No, awesome. I look forward to that. And the thing I was going to say is obviously what you guys have done is you're doing things differently in a way that you're seeing other success models out there. You looked at Saddleback, you looked at Andy Stanley, you looked at all these places that have just had rapid, rapid growth. And you're saying, what are they doing that we can emulate without doing anything to to diminish what the Catholic worship is, the Eucharistic worship, the understanding of what this is, but just incorporating some of these other techniques and environments that people find appealing. What's so wrong with that, right?
Exactly. Find what works, because I think truth is truth, and then find the transferable principles, and then bring it into your context. And I think learning from people that are outside your context is huge, because it makes you think in new ways. It puts you outside your comfort zone, and growth is always outside your comfort zone. And when you can grow and learn as a leader, eventually that always makes a positive impact on other people as well.
Yeah. Well, Tom, I know that you guys have even had some degree of criticism, because it's like, oh, what are these guys doing? They're trying to change everything. Well, you know, we don't even have to go far. Go to Scripture. Look at the Council of Jerusalem, right? I mean, there were things that said, how do we address this culture? How do we do this in a way that says, well, you know, maybe the whole circumcision thing. We need to look at that again, you know?
Well, it's a great example of the tension that's going to be constantly in the church. So it's not because we're doing anything wrong, but there's a tension between insiders and outsiders. And,
right.
And at the Council of Jerusalem, they decided, look, of course we want people to grow in faith. Of course we want people to take seriously God's laws and to teach that to people. But we're going to remove everything, every wall that does not make it easy and accessible for people who are outside the church to come into the church. And that's just such a key lesson that over and over again as a church, we need to keep thinking about what are the barriers or the obstacles that are keeping outsiders from becoming insiders, and just work very hard to remove them. And the nature of the church, is, as the Council of Jerusalem shows, is to become insular unless it decides it's going to become outward focused.
Mm, yeah, that circumcision was probably a big one.
Yeah, can you imagine the church if they decided differently? It would have been all women, right, and children. There wouldn't be any men in the church if there was that was still a requirement.
Oh, geez. So I'm going to talk about your series, because it kind of sounds like there's got to be the elements of this Live and Learn series and what we're talking about, the fact that there's kind of learn by experience and see what's out there. Tell us about what you're doing.
Yeah, our series right now we're doing called Live and Learn, 5 Decisions You'll Never Regret. And, you know, if this is a series, kind of as we go into the spring, it's something, again, anybody, if you're a church person or not a church person, these are kind of lessons from successful living that people are successful at some point come upon from life experience. And
okay.
So they're kind of aha moments, like, oh, yeah, this is the way life works. So last weekend, you know, we talked about playing the hero and not the victim, that Jesus had talked about the loaves and the fishes, and, of course, it was Corpus Christi, but part of what Jesus was telling the apostles to do at that point is to go solve a problem. They bring the problem to Jesus and say, you know, Jesus, solve this problem. Jesus says, no, I want you to solve it. I want you to go feed them. I want you to do something about it. And that's because Jesus wants his disciples not to look at the problems of the world or problems in their lives and say, oh, poor us, we can't do anything about it. No, Jesus has sent us in the world to solve the world's problems, to be transformative. And so that was just one lesson. We talked about how successful people don't look at what they don't have, but they look at the resources God has given them, and they do what is possible, and then they expect God to do the impossible. So that was one of our lessons from our series, and kind of did one this weekend about just lost it for a second, Leo, but about importance of living inside out. Life works inside out. That great in the reading from Paul to the Galatians, he's talking about how he was just way off. He talks about a little bit of his conversion story, that he persecuted the church. Well, why did he persecute the church? Well, because Paul kind of fell for that trap of thinking that religion or faith is all the externals, about sin modification and you know behavior, but not at all what faith is about. It's about a relationship with God and looking at the internal of our heart. And as we look at the internals, God will transform the externals.
Well, yeah, just going back to the series, the lesson from the series last week, yeah, I think that's one of the challenges that we all face, is to really see a problem that can be addressed in ways that we have a skill set to address, right? And the church, as you know, I mean, you know this, I mean, we're from the outside looking in, we want to solve problems that we think people have based on our perceptions of the issues that they have, as opposed to going, what do you really need? And put this in a needs-based sort of analysis to say, let's find ways of giving that, right? Let's find ways of connecting to that. And when you can do that, suddenly you've got an attractive model. You've got something. I mean, this is why Jesus had people flocking to him, because he fed them, right? He fed them. And I know that there's that whole John 6 discourse where we kind of, you know, there were those who walked away, of course, but there's a way of meeting those needs based on their needs, not on our perception of their needs. And you talk about something that can be very powerful and a very powerful way of getting the right connections. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think, and we often don't try to solve problems because we're afraid, you know, we don't know what to do, or there might become a place where we're overwhelmed and or don't understand people's needs, as you're talking about. But ultimately, if you're feeling overwhelmed with trying to solve a problem, congratulations, you're probably what God wants you to be. Because as I look at the scriptures, God never called people to solve, you know, small problems. Mm. It's always pretty big problems. He called Moses to say, get my people out of Egypt. You know, he called the apostles to bring the gospel to the whole world. All these really huge, important missions that God gives are always overwhelming, and we don't have the resources on our own. And there's a great opportunity then to lean into God, to trust Him, to provide. And when there's things we can't do on our own, and we see God come through, I mean, that just strengthens our faith and brings it to a whole new level.
Yeah. And those kind of success stories, Tom, I think where we're at a point where we don't have the resources, right? We clearly don't. We might have a vision, we might have a skill set, but when it comes to really making it happen, it's got to be grace that provides that, and that's exactly the story of the multiplication, because here is a situation where they didn't have. I mean, for all accounts and purposes, they didn't have enough, but God coming into the equation, that blessing that happened, that multiplication, that's when you can't sit back and take credit for that, right? You can't say, we did this. No, you didn't. You didn't do this. It had to be grace.
Right. I think Jesus leads the apostles right to that moment to experience that. And that's not just something he wanted to do with the apostles. That's something he wants to do for every single follower of his, that to put us in those situations where we're overwhelmed and, again, give us a task we can't possibly do on our own. But then to start doing something, what does he do? He says, put them in groups of 50, start handing this food out, and they start doing it, and all of a sudden, wow. Look at God's provision. Look at how God comes through. Look how faithful God is. Again, there's something different about experiencing that personally. I mean, it's one thing to read about in the scriptures or hear about it happening to something else, but it's a whole different thing when we experience it ourselves. And God wants that for every single person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, to share those kind of stories, right? And to see those kind of stories happening now, that they're not things that just happened in the first century or just happened with Jesus walking the earth, but we can have those kind of amazing experiences of providence that are just, we know this would not have happened, this would not have occurred were it not for grace. What a strengthener, what a beautiful way of strengthening faith. Hey, Tom, we're running out of time here, but we can find you on, where's the best place to tap into your stuff, because you got your homilies out there as well, right?
Yeah. The easiest way is just go to churchnativity.tv, churchnativity.tv. You can always watch our weekend masses online or find past messages.
All right. Tom Corcoran with Rebuilt and Church of the Nativity up in Simone. God bless you. Thank you. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless.